You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here is your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
Well, good morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek in Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Jennings in Norman, Oklahoma. You're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for Monday, March 2nd, episode 3895, brought to you by Worm Flooring. Good morning, horse people.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. For new people who haven't been around a long time, this is a politics and really world events free zone, except for horses. So we try and
keep it that
way. I'm saying that, obviously, we're not ignoring the world. We know what's going on. It's just we think that you also need a place where you can get a break from it. And
correction, we are ignoring the world.
In this show, we're ignoring the world. That is true. So we get an update on Jamie's new horse, and our Home for Every Horse highlight rescue of the month is the Colorado Horse Rescue. We also have a trade show interview from Ace Equestrian that I did, and we're going to find out what were some of the strangest jobs our listeners have had in the past, and we're also going to ask ourselves, could we have done that job? Could Jamie and I have done that job? And
I got a good one, Glenn. I got a good one.
All right, good. I do too. And also, what are we doing in the post show?
So some of us are struggling to make friends as adults. And so some of us are going to talk about that.
I think it's almost everybody. I think that's a good topic, actually. We've never talked about that. It's a good
friends
topic.
As adults.
All right. All right, we're going to talk about that in the post show today for the auditors. Hey, the Gaucho Derby finished in Patagonia. It concluded a couple days ago on February the 26th. It was quite emotional, and apparently there was a race to the finish this year, a full-on sprint to the finish line. The front of the pack was close. There were six riders, actually, that launched out together on the final morning, which is unheard of. We've been talking about these races forever. Usually it's one or two people that are way out in front of everybody else. Wasn't the case this time. But we had joint winners again. They came across together, that Sam Whaley-Cohen of the UK and Hugh McMurtry of Australia crossed the line together to share the victory. It was a big redemption for Hugh McMurtry. He had retired in 2024 after cracking his ribs. So he raced last year, or in 2024, and cracked his ribs. So he came back this year hoping to finish. He did, and he actually ended up winning. And then Sam, who from the UK, is a Grand National winning jockey. So he rides the crazy races over in England, and he ran another crazy race in Patagonia and ended up winning. There was two people that I kept seeing in the articles, and they were referred to as the Gaucho Grannies. That was Dorothy Still and Hillary Bernard, affectionately dubbed as the Gaucho Grannies. They weren't racing for the win, but they said they were racing, living their best Patagonian lives, and apparently finished. So,
I am afraid to ask what the people consider a granny.
I don't know how old they were. Apparently, they were granny age. Now, that could be anything from 40 on nowadays. But
I mean, in Oklahoma, you meet girls that are grandmas at like 32.
I don't know the exact age, but they were referred to as grannies the whole time, and they loved the title, apparently. And there were several that did have to make the walk of shame, and how that works in these races is you're camping out at night, and you tie your horse usually to a line or something, and the horses are usually pretty good at standing there. That's what they do, or they hobble them. Well, a couple of them slipped their hobbles, and you end up, they went back to the last station where the food was, and they end up having to carry their saddles over the mountains and through the woods to find their mounts. So that's got to be embarrassing.
That sounds terrible. Like, there's not one part of this I'm like, oh my God, that sounds amazing.
Can you imagine having to carry your saddle back?
I want to ride with the grannies.
Yeah, they sound like they just had the best time. All right, let's do some daily winnies. And congratulations to everybody that rode and probably had the time of their, well, they'll have something they're going to talk about forever. That's for sure. Type B fun, Jamie. Type B fun. I gotta say, though, Type B fun always sounds better when somebody else is doing it. That's
from the podcast to the barn. Here's some hidden birthday wishes to keep you warm. Hope it lasts all year long. Happy birthday, friends.
Well, happy birthday to Kat Thompson, one of our terrific auditors. It's her birthday. We hope you have a terrific day.
I mean, I hate to tell you this, Glenn, because you're just going to be super, super jealous. But on Friday, my racehorse horse, one of them, ran a race. His name is Money Problem. M-U-N-N-Y, Money Problem. Terrible name for a racehorse. But I will tell you that I actually think I'm going to get some money out of this one.
Did you bet on it? First of all, did you bet on it?
No, you can't bet on them because there's so many owners that like the odds get pushed way down. So I did not bet because I actually didn't think he would win. And the cool thing is I was completely right. So his race, now wait for it, because he did win something. His earnings in that race were $680. So I think I get at least 12 pennies for that race being shared. So
I am so jealous. Well, that's more than I won.
Mean, it's raining up in here. he didn't do so good. I think he finished in seventh. He finished in seventh by like 5.5 lengths. So he was close, but then turns out he tied up afterwards, possibly. So he's going to need some time off. It's fine. Everything's fine. He's fine. Money Problem is, he's so pretty. So that's cool.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you. I mean, $680 divided by 10,000. What does that come out to?
You won't be buying a coffee with it. Let's put it that way. You know that penny candy they used to sell? You're not even getting one of those.
No, but I could steal one.
So how's your new guy? He arrived on, when was it, Wednesday night or Thursday night? I forget now.
He arrived on, I believe, Thursday night. Yep. And, you know, it's interesting because it's really different. Just the stallion versus gelding is so dramatic. I just don't understand why anybody who does not have a full-on breeding operation would own a stallion. It's a nightmare. So he comes in, he's in the covered round pen, which is fantastic. It's like I have my own covered stallion stall. It's awesome. So he's in there, and anytime a horse, which he's in quarantine, so nobody's close, but anytime any horse walks up in the general vicinity, he starts screaming and screaming and pacing and walking and all this. And I just feel so bad for him because I just want to like let him play, but you can't because he has giant testicles and it just makes them so stupid. Now, he actually is so sweet. He's so sweet. Like when there's nobody around and he's calm and quiet in the round pen, I can go in. I gave him a bath. I unbraided his hair. Then I rebraided his hair. And he's very, very sweet until the potential of another horse in the general vicinity sets him off again. Now, the great.
And apparently he's not particular about his horse selection.
I don't
selection.
Have any mares here. There's no mares. He's just
anybody, please.
Just somebody, please. Oh my God. And it's really sad. Like, I feel so bad for stallions that are not castrated and can't have like a real life. Again, if you're breeding them, I get it. Like, that's their job. And horses should have jobs, but this is not his job.
So I assume the vet's coming soon.
Well, here's the thing is like he shipped in on Thursday and I was like, I need to give him some time to just chill out because last time I got an Andalusian stallion was Miles and he was laid down the next day, but he did not have as tumultuous
have a 5-day
of a
trip
as this guy. So I am proud to say, and I'm so excited. I've never been this excited. Like, I'm so excited. I am loading him up and taking him to the hospital today, and he will be castrated at 9 a.m. I mean, just like his personality when he's not testosterone fueled is just delightful. And he's so sweet and he loves scratches and he wants you to play with his hair and he just like loves it. And then he's like, oh my God, vagina. Like, it's so weird. It's so weird.
Now, has he settled in well, eating and all that stuff?
Oh, yeah. And the thing is, what they told me, and there's a couple issues with him. And I really thought, like, this is a really good affordable way for people to get some well-bred, you know, or really nice Andalusians, but it's really not. There's so many things that they do to them that I'm discovering. Like when I went to see him, he was in a cross tie area, but it was actually stocks. So he was standing in stocks and he had a rope halter on with like a very severe, almost like a bicycle chain nose on the front of the halter. And he was chained. There's a brick wall behind him and he was chained like cross ties. And they went up, has his ears on both sides and then down pat towards his shoulders on the other side. So there's like four angles of ties. And I was like, oh, I wonder how he cross ties. So I took him out Saturday and I was like, I'm going to give him a bath and put him in the cross ties. No, he doesn't cross tie without. And the other thing is too, that the way that they must have led him around, because I didn't see any of that. You know, he was in the cross ties. They tacked him up and I got on. The way that he doesn't lead, like he hasn't, like if you try to back him up, even the dually halter means nothing, nothing. You go to push him back and he just tucks his nose into his chest. And I'm like heaving on his shoulder. I'm like, I have to open the door. But he just, I think with the bicycle chain kind of situation over and around the nose, like he's going to have to learn how to lead. Like, but in a, I think I'm gonna have to come up with some sort of new way. So I actually sent a video to Monty and I'm waiting on his answer back, because I was like, how do you teach a horse to lead that has had so much more than you would ever do, and to bring them back to sensitize them again to that stuff? So I'm waiting on an answer from the man, but it's going to be interesting. But again, I think once all this testosterone is gone, he's going to be just amazing. Like, I really feel like I could have hopped on a bareback the other day, but I'm too old for that. So it didn't. But a younger me would have totally jumped on him. And that has to count for something.
I'll put a picture in the show notes. There, you did post pictures after you apparently did manage to give him a bath, because he looks so much better. He looked clean.
Oh, man. He was really good for it. And he just stood there. I have a little bit of grass coming up because February's been really pretty here. And so he was just eating grass and I was spraying him. I got one of those. You know how there's like the shampoo in the bottle and you can twist it to like on and
that's what we do. That's what we do. I call it the car wash. It's like a car wash.
Yep. However, I ran out of shampoo like forever ago. And I was like, this dude is so disgusting. I mean, like he had mud caked, like to where if you went to brush it, it would just scrape along the top of it. It's like brushing off your driveway. So I took the car wash thing and I filled it with Blue Dawn. And I was like, we're just going to degrease you. And it worked.
We put dish detergent in there.
Blue Dawn.
Yeah, that's all we do. We mix it in there with water. You just put it's concentrated. So you mix it in with water. It works for great.
They use it with baby ducks to get oil off them for oil spills. I was like, this has to be fine.
But the car wash things are, they're a godsend for horse husbands.
It was amazing. And so I was able to spray all over him and all around. And he had these just giant gross spots on his body. And I mean, he had days and days of travel. And the week before that was total mud when he was in Bakersfield. So it was like, it was so gross. All the water coming off of him was disgusting. It was like greenish black, blah. And so he feels so much better. And I was able to take the electric tape out of his mane.
His mane looks nice now.
Well, half of it fell out. You can't, like, he's probably had those braids in for months. You know, and so when I took
needs a little trimming on the mane, a little pulling there, but
no.
That ain't going to happen right away.
Andalusians manes. You don't pull Andalusians manes ever. You don't trim bridle pass. You don't do any of that. Grow it out.
Send your hate mail to Jennifer at Horse Radio.
You're fine. We all have to learn the hard way. Okay. But yeah, so it's really,
I saw his mane and went, oh, he's got, you know, broken ends. I got to fix those.
He's got split ends. Yes. Oh my God. You have like no split ends. So he's going to be awesome. But today is the day I'm going to load him up. And then because he doesn't really lead. And they did send me with that halter that he has. And I'm like, it's cut. Like, it's not like a, it's covered bicycle chain, you know? So that's better.
Oh, yeah. There you go. Yeah.
Wrapped bicycle chain, so it's fine. But yeah, I'm gonna back the trailer up to the round pen and be like, "Let's go, buddy!" And hop in and close the door.
Yeah, he's not gonna want to see a trailer for a while.
I know it's gonna be a lot, but you know what? That's what we're gonna do, and I'm just ready for him to be able to have a normal life. And I'm sure that many things that I have said in the last 5 minutes are gonna be very offensive to some people.
Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com.
There you go.
She's in there going, "No, not me." Did you come up with a name? Have you named this beast?
I think I did name him. And I would like to say that all of the suggestions are amazing. And I mean, I've gotten hundreds of like really great suggestions, really great ones. And I love all of them. And I didn't use any of them.
You said you were going to name this one yourself.
This one's mine, damn it. And so the whole purpose of getting this horse was I just want to have a friend for the rest of my life. I'm 48, for God's sake. I want to have a young friend that I can just, hopefully this is my last forever horse, you know? And I just want him to be my friend. And then people, what are you going to do with him? I don't know. We're going to be friends. So I'm going to call him Amigo.
Well, that means friend. That's
it does.
Yeah, that's and very literal.
He's Spanish and he's gonna be my friend. So my friend Amigo. Yeah.
I can spell it.
Cool. Well, I walked in, I was like, "Hola, amigo, ¿cómo está?" Like speaking all my Spanish, and I was like, "Oh my god, that's a really good name. Amigo. I don't know any other. I've never had a horse named Amigo."
That's a great name. I like that name. It's simple, it's quick, it's easy to write. It won't take up much room on the name plaque.
It's mi amigo.
Are you gonna have a really long barn name that has amigo in it?
No, he's
like Amigo Alfredo, or you know,
Amigo Alfredo. That's like ATM machine. But no, he has a registered name, so I mean, I don't love it, but it means happy. So you know, it's my happy friend. His name is perfect. Jubiloso. So
Jubiloso happy... Amigo. It's perfect. Yeah. It goes Thank together you. Even.
Thank you. I know I didn't. You and Lucas have named everything. Well, you and Lucas and Chad has named a couple too. And so I just felt like it was my turn. And everybody gave me, again, great suggestions. And then somebody's like, "Oh my God, you're going to have so much fun getting tack. That's like the Three Amigos." Because like you could have one of those like black sombreros with the little blingy. I was like, "Oh my God, I'm going to totally bling out a Three Amigos saddle pad."
There's your Halloween outfit. Right there.
I know. And you know what? Lucas went as a Three Amigo for Halloween 2 years ago. So I've got his whole costume. I can Perfect. Wear it. It's amazing.
Perfect.
Thank Perfect. You.
Now you need Martin Short to join you for your picture.
I know. He's going to be any day. Any day.
Well, congratulations. I love that name, actually. That's a great
Thank
name.
You.
One, I can remember it. Two, I can spell it. And three, I can say it. I like all of those.
Well, that was not what I was going for, but cool.
Hey, I saw pictures of you.
Oh, no.
You are such a freaking horsewoman. I saw pictures of you the other night going out to a fancy party in your fancy outfit, shoveling crap in the stalls. But what I noticed was it's the first time I've really seen pictures of your floor. Your worm flooring.
Well, I would like to give worm flooring. So, yes. So, we had a fundraiser at Lucas's school because, you know, you don't pay enough. Then you have to go pay more.
Oh, you have to go up and make funds because your tuition isn't enough.
Yeah, exactly. So, they had a fundraiser and they call it the Green Gala. And so, I had like a really cute pants suit on.
You look great.
Thank you.
In the barn.
And high heels. It was just like 2-inch heels. And they were like really spiky kind of heels. And I don't wear this very often, but I bought them for this. And you couldn't see them in the pictures because I'm 5'2" in my outfit. I walked on my pants all day. But anyway, so yeah, I went to the barn and I had to give Amigo some hay. He needed some alfalfa, Glenn. It was like 10 o'clock at night.
Rolling his eyeballs.
Starving to death. I was like, pull up. I got to check. I didn't tell him what I was doing. I was like, hey, I need to check on the... barn doors, make sure everything's locked up. And he's like, okay. So I get out to the barn and then Ginger saw me drive up. So she comes out and I'm like, and there was poop right in front, like right in the front, and I had to get it out. So I didn't walk in the stall with my high heels, but I stood on my worm flooring with high heels. And I would like to tell you that worm flooring is impenetrable to high heels.
Oh, it's good to know. Because it happens so often, I'm sure.
I was like, oh my God, this is perfect. I was like, I just wrote a commercial for worm flooring. It is heel friendly.
He needs to add that to his advertising.
Spike heel friendly.
And you didn't slip at all, did you?
No, it's awesome. It's you can't slip, and it's fantastic. And I just want to tell you that, yes, horse hooves, apparently they've done rhino housing, they've done giraffe housing, and now high heels. So
you could have a really ritzy party in your barn, and everybody would be fine.
Yes, yes. You know what? No, I'm not going to have parties for anybody.
You don't have any chandeliers.
I don't have any chandeliers in my barn, and kind of smells like, well, I mean, obviously horses poop in it, which is why I had to pick up the poop on Saturday night at 10 o'clock in my high heels, which, by the way, I would like to point out that I went to a whole function and gala and got home and it was before 10. It was bedtime.
Yeah, they'd raised enough funds. Time to go home.
Yeah, time to go home. We bid on something. I don't know what it was. Chad bid on a garage door opener or something and we left.
Wormflooring.com is where you can find that impenetrable. Thank you. That's kind of flooring for your barn or your trailer. You can get it in your trailer.
I'm sure Jared from Worm Flooring is going to be very thrilled about learning this about his floors.
He is. And you're going to be using your Worm Flooring because you're going to load up your horse and take your horse there to get his serious business done to the vet's office.
God.
And then
this
he'll be
amazing.
Able to ride home on his Worm Flooring and it'll be all comfortable. And he won't be slipping, even though he'll be a little groggy.
So. I wonder if Worm can do my bedroom.
And on that note, wormflooring.com. Let's go to our guest. Well, it's time for our Home for Every Horse Rescue of the Month. And this month, we're heading to the state of Colorado, and we're speaking to Grace, who is with Colorado Horse Rescue. Hey, Grace.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for joining us this morning from your beautiful state, one of my favorite states in the whole country, by the way. Just saying, it's so cool in Colorado. You know what's fun about Colorado is everybody knows you for the mountains, right? But you have so many different topographies in Colorado.
Absolutely.
It's not all just, 14,000 foot mountains. It's
100%. Yeah, we've got a little bit of everything out here. You can get every season in, 1 hour span of time. So yeah, we're lucky to live here for sure.
Well, Colorado Horse Rescue, tell us about that.
Yeah, so Colorado Horse Rescue, we're located here in Longmont, Colorado, just north of Boulder. We were founded in 1986, so we're actually celebrating our 40th year as an organization this year.
Wow, that's great.
You guys are OG.
Yeah. It's something we're pretty proud of, and we're definitely celebrating a lot this year. Yeah, so that's how long we've been around, and we do a little bit of everything when it comes to horses who come into us. We manage and house around 60 horses at any given time. We place more than that in a year. I like to say we at least overturn our herd in a 1 year time frame. This past year, we placed 67 horses into loving homes. Yeah, we take in horses from lots of different backgrounds. So our first priority is accepting private owner surrenders. So helping out members of our equine community and helping people in need of rehoming. So often that's a financial reason, or sometimes it's the horse needs training or physical rehabilitation. So lots of reasons there. And then we also take in horses from a program called the Annie Project.
I love this when I read about it. Jamie helps off the track thoroughbreds, but never thought about this. Tell us about it because it's kind of unique.
Yeah, so the Annie Project was actually founded years ago, originally by another organization here in Colorado, and they had just identified this need within Dude and Guest Ranch, horse populations, where historically these horses, when they aged out or just physically couldn't hold up to the, kind of rigorous life of a dude horse, carrying guests around on trails and everything like that. Very often they were at times brought to an auction, to a livestock auction, when they couldn't really do that job anymore. So the Annie Project was established in order to offer those horses and those ranches an alternative retirement plan. So yeah, it's a safe pathway for horses in that line of work who need a soft place to land, you know, get any care they need and then be placed in loving retirement homes.
I was going to say most, first of all, you're getting the most trained horse you're ever going to get. But the second thing is most of them, I guess, would still be good for light trail riding and stuff.
Yeah. So some of them can go on to, you know, still have riding careers in with their families. So some go on to be just, you know, lighter trail riding horses, or, you know, putts around the property type horses, maybe a lead line horse for some grandkids or things like that. Yeah. And then some of them truly just need, you know, like a non-riding retirement home. So we're happy to help them find the right home for them.
How do you find people to adopt your horses? What do you do for the outreach for that?
Yeah, we definitely do. We do a lot of social media marketing. So definitely follow us on Facebook, Instagram. The gal who runs our social media is just awesome, super creative. So that way we have our website online. So much of it, though, I always am just hearing it's word of mouth that brings people through our gates and brings people to apply. I feel like that's so much of the horse industry is just word of mouth, who you know. We try to really get our horses and our training team out there in the community. So this year we've been really trying to get out to some local shows and, you know, things like that to just get our name out there, show that we do have some really amazing horses ready to, you know, be athletes with their next people or just be that pleasure horse in a home. So yeah, lots of word of mouth, but then we do, you know, try our best on social media, try to reach, you know, all the different kinds of people.
So I know that you guys you're pretty picky. You do, you know, with your potential adopters, you do vet them.
Yeah.
What do you look for, and what are the red flags that you see? Why would they? One, I assume they don't have property or fencing, or I mean, you're looking at all that stuff. Is there a red flag that pops up all the time?
You know, a red flag, it's honestly hard to identify one single thing. Sometimes there certainly can just, you know, I've been in this role for 6 years. So I've placed a lot of horses in a lot of homes and worked with a lot of people. I try to really give people a couple chances. Some people, you know, you come in, you almost feel like you're kind of in like an interview when you're coming out to meet a horse or something. So I always say, like, it's not a personality contest. I don't need to, you know, think you're my next best friend for you to be a wonderful horse owner. So, you know, red flags. If somebody, you know, mentions wanting to maybe breed a horse or, you know, overuse a horse that, you know, I've clearly stated their physical limitations or something like that, is, you know, sure a red flag for that horse in particular. But I really try to give people the benefit of the doubt and give them a couple chances to, you know, make a good impression, prove that they're going to be a great home for a horse. And we really focus on matching the potential horse owner to the horse that fits their needs the most of our herd. So our process is really based on like a very careful matching system, instead of people just applying, I want this horse, and then we place them that horse. They submit a horse match profile through our website, and we read all about what they're looking for, what their needs are, what level of, you know, rider or horse handler they are. And then we really,
which we all know is about half true on most of those. Most people overrate their riding ability.
Yeah, I know. Some people can kind of oversell their skills.
I rode one when I was 16 and I'm an expert. I didn't fall off.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, yeah. So we kind of get to know them on paper and then invite them out in person or talk to them on the phone. And yeah, just kind of take it from there.
So is there such a thing as a temporary, where somebody comes to you and says they're having a temporary hardship? I don't know what that would be. And I mean, is that possible? Or what, if the horse come into the system, it's in the system?
Yeah. We have a couple options for things like that. So we actually have a program called our Leg Up program. That is for owners who are, you know, outside of our organization, just in the community, who are experiencing some kind of temporary financial, you know, challenge in life and need a little bit of support, specifically when it comes to keeping their horses. So, you know, whenever we can, we try to help owners keep their horses. We would love for, you know, less and less horses to fall into, you know, the cycle of rescue or, you know, just falling at risk in general. So the Leg Up program can provide financial relief to owners in need who are experiencing like a short-term financial challenge in life. So we can pay for things like cover their hay costs for, you know, a couple of months, or cover a specific vet cost that came up. Their horse, you know, got a huge injury or something, needs surgery, or, you know, had an emergency come up that they need some financial assistance with. We at times have covered cases like that, or, you know, end of life choices are really expensive to cover. So we've partnered with some families to help provide their horses with end of life care. Yeah. So all kinds of things, board and stuff like that. So that's a really great option for somebody who's found themselves in some kind of temporary financial crisis and would like to keep their horse. Yeah. So that's a great option.
All right. And now we always do a horse available of the month.
Yeah.
And it's funny that you have this pony. His name is Taco. Jamie had a very famous pony here on the show called Taco Tuesday. So not the same color, though. Different color.
Yeah.
Different horse.
Taco Tuesday is fine in his home. This is not Taco Tuesday.
Yeah. Oh, man. We just did on social media a couple weeks back. We did a Taco Tuesday for our Taco.
Oh, great.
You guys have to go back and find that.
And you actually do work with the horses, I mean, as far as rehabilitating and training and things like that. Mm-hmm. So tell us about Taco.
Yeah, so Taco actually came to us through the Annie Project. He is younger, he's 10 years old. So he came to us from a ranch who had purchased a group of horses kind of sight unseen. Yeah, from a seller, hoping that they would make really wonderful guest horses. When the horses showed up, they were not quite, you know, what they were told that they would be. Lots of them needed further training that they just didn't have the resources for at the time. And lots of them also needed true like physical rehab, had some medical stuff going on. So Taco kind of found himself in need of both. He had really neglected hooves and needed to put a significant amount of weight on. So he needed some physical rehab in that aspect that we were thankfully able to provide him. And then when we started working with him, we found that he was also very green under saddle, definitely had some knowledge, you know, back there in his brain, but needed a little refresher with our team. So yeah, we actually brought in four horses from that group, and I believe the rest ended up being good matches for their program, but Taco was one of those four. And yeah, now, so he spent months in a physical rehab program with our amazing care team, with our vet, with our farriers, all kind of working together to get him sound, get him the weight he needed put on, and yeah, just becoming a healthy, happy little guy.
Now he's stinking cute. I don't know, Jamie,
oh my gosh,
if you see his picture,
cutest.
But he's so cute. I love the picture.
I think that, so the guest ranch said that they were told he was a draft cross. And this
he
horse
does
is
not
like
look like a draft cross,
but very close up. If you got like a super close up picture of his face, I guess you could see.
I don't know. I almost looked at his face and went Arabian because of the dish.
I know.
You know?
Yeah, he almost has more of like an Arabian pony.
Yeah, he does. He's very cute. But he does look like
a guy too. He's like 14 hands. Yeah.
He looks like he has the pony tude. I have a pony that's pony tude. It's the same look. It's
like, yeah, absolutely. He's got personality plus for sure. He will keep your life super interesting, and he gives all of us a laugh every day. Yeah, so he's just turned into a really wonderful pony. Our training team has been working with him for the last several months, and we've got him started over some, you know, low fences, and we've taken him to a couple shows now. And now that he's sound, we have so much to work with in training. And yeah, he's just going to be an amazing equine partner in the right home.
Now, it does say here on his ad that needs an advanced rider. Is that still true, or have we?
You know, he's every day he's getting better and better. I would say still he needs somebody who knows what they're doing. Maybe a really competent intermediate rider would do well with him. He's just at a stage where he needs the miles. He needs to see things in the world and, you know, just keep gaining experience. But he's at a great age. He's 10 years old. And yeah, I think like a really competent youth rider or a petite adult wanting to, you know, do all kinds of low-level showing or something would do really great with him.
And his adoption fee is $3,000. Where can people find him? We'll put a link in our show notes, but they just go to your website, right?
Yeah. You can see him and all of our other adoptable horses on chr.org.
chr.org. Well, we thank you for joining us today. Thank you for the good work you're doing out there in Colorado, and especially for the ranch horses. I think that's a cool program. Jamie has connections in Colorado, kind of in a ranch horse kind of situation.
I spend a couple weeks every summer in Cotopaxi. One of the best couple weeks of my year for sure. Colorado's amazing.
Very cool. Well, yeah, thank you guys so much for having me and highlighting us. Thanks for highlighting other wonderful rescues as well. And we really appreciate the opportunity.
And we want to thank the group over at Home for Every Horse for putting us in contact with you. And the website, again, is chr.org. We'll put a link in the show notes directly to Taco. Let's find Taco a home.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Horse and Rider On Demand allows you to train smarter, not harder. Our training video collection featuring some of the industry's top Western professionals like Bud Lyon, Cody Crow, Ryan Rushing, and more can help you perfect your horsemanship and improve your performance in the arena. Get access to hundreds of videos and learn more about events like ranch horse versatility, reining, working cow horse, ranch riding, and more for just $14.99 a month. Watch anywhere, anytime. Horse and Rider On Demand can be streamed from any smart device. Visit ondemand.horseandrider.com to start your 7-day free trial. That's ondemand.horseandrider.com. So, Jamie, I ride my bike around the neighborhood here, and I literally can do 12 to 15 miles just on sand roads in the neighborhoods.
Is this your electric bike, though?
Yes, my electric bike. Okay. So I get out and ride it and do my ride and everything. And the other day, I rode into a neighborhood on the sand roads that I don't ride in much. And this neighborhood, I would say, is half 1960s single-wide trailers that have tarps on the roofs.
Okay.
And half very nice houses. You know, it's kind of they're mixed in now. The houses are taking over from the 1960s single
whites. So Palatka on the left and then Ocala on the right.
Okay, Palatka on the left, Ocala on the right. That's perfect. So I'm riding through that neighborhood, and I even carry dog spray there because for some reason they don't like to pin up their dogs there and they chase you and, you know, it's an issue. So I've never had to use the dog spray, but I've gotten close a couple times. So I'm riding through, and it wasn't the dogs that caused the problem on Saturday morning. And it was early. It was probably 8:30, right? And I'm riding through. It's kind of chilly out. You know, we've been getting down into the 40s, so it was kind of chilly out in the morning. And I go by this yard, and it's one of the 1960s single wides with the tarps on the roof. And there's this guy, and he's probably 75, 80. And he's out in the front yard right by the road. And when I looked, I didn't see anything on him. He was like naked.
What?
Yep. And I had to look again. So you just have to in a case like that. And I'm going by at a pretty good clip. And I look at him again and I realize he did have the tiniest Speedo I've ever seen on a human. He was wearing that, but otherwise he was out walking around his front yard with no clothes on. And I'm telling you, it was probably 50 degrees, maybe 55. And I was thinking, oh, I wonder what his neighbors think. Because you know if he's doing it then, he's doing it all the time.
Right.
And let me tell you, that was a sight I cannot unsee. I will not
see that.
No.
To me, what I would do is I would continue biking, pull out my cell phone and call the authorities because that guy needs help.
But I figure the neighbors see him, right? So they've dealt with it before, maybe. But he was also one of those, and I'm going to describe it perfectly. You'll know exactly what he looked like. He was one of the old leathery, skinny Florida guys.
Oh, he didn't have a beer belly.
No, this was a skinny Florida old leathery guy.
Well, he's just not getting a tan. Glenn, don't judge.
I don't know. Yeah, that was my Florida man moment on Saturday morning, and I still haven't overcome it. So
I'm really shocked that you didn't stop and talk to him. I'm sure he's just like,
I said hi on the way by only because I wanted to be friendly because I didn't. Well, he couldn't have been carrying a weapon though, right? I mean, I was probably safe.
He might have had a weapon. You just didn't see it.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, that was my Florida man moment, and now I'm going to be extra careful when I drive by that particular neighborhood from now on.
Next time, call and get a wellness check just to make sure.
Next time, I'll put my GoPro on my bike so that I have proof. That's what I'll do. That'll send you the
GoPro
video.
And then call the authorities for a wellness check.
He was well. He was walking around. All right, let's head over to a recording I did at the trade show in Dallas. Another company that I found that has cool new products, and I thought you would enjoy this. Well, hi, Annie with Ace Equestrian. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Good. So Ace Equestrian, what is Ace Equestrian?
Ace Equestrian is mostly a solution-based company for horse and some pet accessories. Having been hands-on in the barn my entire life, I think it's incredibly important.
What discipline?
My background is hunters mostly.
Okay.
But, you know, the brand now has, you know, turned into more of a horse care and performance product line, which can, you know, apply to multiple disciplines, particularly the horse care products.
And what products are they? What do you have specifically?
Our original product for the performance line was our non-slip pad, which everybody uses. But one of our newest and exciting products, which would fall under the horse care line, is our cold feet ice boots. So they're actually ice boots for hooves. Nobody had done that before. So it's the great thing about them is you can stack them with standard leg ice
boots. So you just put the whole boot in the freezer?
You do.
I love that idea, actually.
Yep. And
You're right. I don't think I've seen that before.
No, you haven't. That's because they didn't exist until we had a need for them. And that's what's so important about being hands-on in the barn is you find the areas that, you know, you're missing products and where you wish you had something. So that's where we designed from. But they are great. You can stack them with other ice boots for the limbs and get the whole limb iced.
So now, do you have kids that are little hunters at this point?
Do I have what?
Kids that are little hunters at this point?
I just have four-legged kids.
Okay. You have big hunters.
Yes. Yep. Of the dog and horse variety. Yeah.
So what makes yours unique? Tell me about your what makes your products unique?
Well, this particular product is unique just because it hasn't existed previously, and it does solve fills a big hole in the industry.
When do people usually use them?
Well, when you're icing horses after work or with injury or rehab, you can actually leave these on even in the stall.
Okay.
So
they stay on?
Yep, just like bell boots, actually.
They kind of look like an overgrown bell boot.
Yep, that's exactly what they are.
Yeah, they do kind of look that way. And they're Velcroed on, I assume, with super Velcro.
They are. They have very strong Velcro, and they have gel ice packs, so they actually stay pliable as well once they've frozen.
So do you advise people? See, I'm a horse husband, so I think like a horse husband. So I think, I don't want this thing in my freezer after it's been on the horse. So I would just throw it in the bag and then put it in the freezer. That's a horse.
You could certainly do that. You could put it in just a shopping bag. You could put it in a Ziploc bag. A lot of people have freezers in the barns and at the horse shows.
Those are horse husband approved.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I don't think you're mixing too much food in your horse show freezer.
No.
So you should be safe.
I love this. And what do they retail for?
$70 a pair.
A pair for two.
Yes.
That's a good deal,
yep.
Actually.
Yeah, it's great.
For a therapeutic product.
Yeah, and it's something that everybody needs, so it should be accessible to most audiences, and, you know, you can use it all the time.
Where do people find it?
You can find it at our website, which is ace-equestrian.com, or we're in retailers all throughout the U.S.
Good job.
And beyond.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Well, in our segment today, this is normally when we do a question first world problems, but neither Jamie or I felt that was appropriate today. So I asked the auditors, I said, what's one job that you've done that you can't believe you did or was just plain wacky? And this came from a YouTube video I watched, which reminded me of a job I had that I can't believe I did and had the capability to even do because I would not be able to do it today. So I asked the auditors, and we got some interesting ones. So we'll tell you ours, and then we'll talk about the auditors, and we'll determine whether Jamie and I could do these jobs. Would we do these jobs, or are we even able, qualified to do these jobs? All right.
No, let me break that down. Like, so here's the thing: what I would do now versus what I would do when I was 19 and hungry are two completely different people. So would you like it hungry 19-year-old me, or would you like me now?
Now, could we do these jobs now? Because I do think at 19, you'll do almost anything.
And I'm going to tell you about what I did when I was 19, which
all right.
is anything.
You want to go first?
Well, sure. I was in college, and I actually couldn't afford anything. Like, I was starving to death, but I was in college and I didn't have a credit card. I've never had debt. So I wanted to be a vet, and I was at the University of Kentucky, and I wanted to be a veterinarian. And I thought the best way to get the best resume was I worked at the Gluck Equine Research Center, which is like their whole equine research center in Kentucky. Yeah. It's renowned. And I worked for Dr. Thomas Tobin and worked in his lab. And my job, okay, ready for this one?
I'm ready.
I made $3.15 an hour. And I mean, that's below minimum wage, but you worked for the university, but I was just all I could do. I washed test tubes.
You washed beakers.
And there's a very specific way to wash test tubes. It's a whole thing. And then when I was done washing the test tubes, I had to go out to the university's farms, which is where they had all of the animal, the horses that were being used for their things. And I had to collect urine. And they had bags of urine, like bags inside the mares. And my job was to unscrew it and let the urine fall out into another container. So I had to drain urine bags. And the thing is, the medication made their urine different.
Oh, so it was like, stank.
Did you ever seen those slime cups where you grab it and the slime just like, what?
Yeah.
Oozes down. That is what half of the mare's urine was like. So you would open it and have to pour this.
Aren't you glad you're listening to this at lunch, everybody?
So, but it was like, and I made $3.15 an hour, and then I would go back and wash more test tubes, which, by the way, you have to scrub out with a certain type of soap and then rinse 7 times in regular water and then rinse them 7 times in a different water and then 7 times in another water.
Because they have to be absolutely sterile.
Yeah. 21 times you had to rinse this thing out. It was the worst. Like, I still can't.
Okay, I couldn't
do
that job. I'm out.
Urine bags.
You win that one.
It's fine.
I have one that I can't believe I did. I was a short order cook at the busiest diner in all of Lancaster County, Zinn's Diner, for anybody that lived in Lancaster remembers that. It was busy 24 hours a day, and I worked a night shift as a short order cook. So 11 at night to 7 in the morning.
Oh, all the drunk people.
Yeah, all the drunk people. And the problem was, we were busy. I mean, we'd have 20 to 25 orders at a time.
Oh, wow.
There were 4 cooks on 24 hours a day. One just did pancake grill. Just did pancakes. That's how many pancake orders were coming in.
What did you do?
Well, you rotated. So one had the fryers, one did pancake grill, one did the egg grill, which was 6 foot long. And then there was one guy who just read the orders and made toast. Literally, that's what he did because there was so much toast being made. He had a full-time person making toast. So they would call out the orders. I could remember them today. I mean, there was one morning when I had 50 overlight eggs in the grill at a time. You would crack them with one with each hand. And by the time you were done cracking the 50 eggs on the grill, you were flipping the first ones. That's how we would have an 8-foot grill with pancakes filled for an entire 8-hour shift. It was crazy busy, but now I think back, there's no way I'd remember those orders. They called them out, and you had to remember them, and which ones went with which stuff on which plates, and you would get 20 orders, and it was just nuts like that, and they were all handwritten. The hardest job there, actually, was reading the orders from the waitresses, because you couldn't read their writing.
Did you have, zits from, the fryers and stuff?
Yeah, I had zits then anyway, because I was a teenager, but I couldn't. That's one of the jobs. It wasn't a gross job, but I couldn't do it today. I don't have the mental capacity to do that.
No, yeah, that's tough.
I couldn't do it. I don't know how I did it then. I don't know how I didn't screw up 1,000 orders. The one worst morning we ever had was, it was probably 5:30 in the morning, got really busy. Buses would come in with people at that time. And we had a ton of orders come in at the same time. And there were literally 50 overlight eggs on the grill. And the grill started sticking. And it would do that for various reasons. It would either surge in heat, it would drop temperature. Whatever it was, it happened occasionally. And then you'd have to scrape all 50 eggs off because they all started sticking. So they weren't overlight anymore. They were pretty much scrambled and stuck to the grill. So you had to scrape them all out. And you literally had to take 15 minutes to clean the grill down. and then oil it up. And meanwhile, nobody's getting their orders. So all the waitresses are pissed. The people are pissed. Everybody's pissed.
So do you still have, because I for a long time, I think they've basically quit now. I would have, because I used to have to get up for radio at 2:30 in the morning, and I would have dreams that I overslept and just nightmares about that job. Do you still have nightmares about that job with the grill not working?
Yes, I do. And that's what it is. It's the grill not working and getting yelled at by everybody.
that's what it is. Poor Glenn.
And the other thing that was dangerous, and I don't know how they let 17-year-old kids do this, is the night shift had to empty the oil from the fryers. Well, it must have weighed 50 pounds, you know, and you had to pull that hot oil tank out of the fryer and dump it. And then what they did is they went through stages with the oil. So fish was the last stage, but it had been used for everything else up to then, till it got to fish. And then once it was used with fish, you pitched it. But I mean, you had to lift those that hot. How we were allowed to do that, I don't know. I don't know.
Makes me never want to eat at a diner ever again.
You did get free food. And at that age, I was probably making the same as you. I was probably making $2.50 an hour. But you got free food. So that was good. That was the good part. All right, let's do some of the auditor ones here. How about this? She was a cleaner and used to clean a nudist apartment. She said it was way too awkward.
Were they like so yes. We have a girl yes. that comes over like once a month and I leave when she's here.
Oh, I guarantee you these people weren't leaving. I guarantee you.
Oh, that is awkward.
Speaking on the nudist front, and you know this person, and she's been on our show, so I'm not going to say her name. And I've heard this story. She was a go-go dancer at a club in New Orleans. And her job as a go-go dancer is obviously to get people out there dancing. And she did clarify, with my clothes on, how dare you think that? So, but she was.
And I know this person?
Yes, you do. Do you think you could be a go-go dancer? And she was one of those that actually danced in one of the cages hanging from the ceiling. You know, at the
19-year-old me? Hell yeah. 48-year-old me? Not a chance. My back would hurt after 10 minutes. I couldn't even get in the cage now.
Yeah, I don't know how they got up there. She also said then she graduated to security manager. This person's your height. She was the security manager in charge of all the bouncers at the club. How she got that job. How about I babysat six exotic birds ranging in size from a hyacinth to a one-legged lovebird. So when the people went away, she would come over and take care of the birds. She had to spend 6 months going down there once a month to learn how to take care of them. So that's a lot of training to take care of some birds when they go away. She said, and the ironic thing is I'm scared of birds. But she said, I really wanted to buy a new saddle. Folded sheets at a hospital as they came out of the washer, basically the dryer thing. She said, I kept messing up the folding directions, so it slowed down the flow. And she said, I lasted a day and quit. I was a lunch lady at the kids' school when they were little. Could you be a lunch lady?
No.
I think that takes a special person.
I don't even think 19-year-old me could have done that.
No, I think that takes a special person. How about they work for a coffee roaster? We would roast, blend, and pack up coffee. Even after I showered, I would still smell like coffee. I think smelling like horses is better. I don't like coffee, but I like the smell of coffee. I do like to smell it cooking, but I think if you worked with it every day, all day, it'd get old.
Yeah.
How about this? Worked as a mosquito control tech for the state. Drove around sampling water at specific locations during the day and applied chemicals then at night, driving the sprayer truck. He said it was the most boring thing ever because you just drive the same roads all night for weeks and weeks on end. So spraying for mosquitoes. I don't know. Is that a thing anymore?
They would spray in Arizona. We would call because the mosquitoes, we lived in a area where we irrigated pastures. Mm. Oh, God. Like 2 months a year, July and August, you couldn't even, it was hard to turn the horses out. So you would call and they would spray at night.
They must spray in Florida. I think it's farther than they spray.
I mean, that's how they keep, like, you know, malaria at bay, I guess.
One summer when I was in college, I worked for the Adirondack Park Agency doing a sign survey to be sure the local businesses were in compliance. For the most part, it was pretty boring, but I got to go out in the lake in a boat and do some of the surveys from the water. Well, I could do that job. This is one we could do. We could look at signs and make sure they were the right measurements and they didn't say nasty things. We could do that.
I'm not going in the boat.
Nope. Oh, you're out. That's right. I'd be in. I'm okay with that one. I mentioned it in another post, but I was the mall Easter bunny, and it was definitely my weirdest that I could not do. Santa or Easter bunny.
Pigs or it didn't happen because some of those Easter bunnies look like the devil.
They are creepy looking. They're more creepy than some of the creepy Santas. Everybody said I should do Santa. Just grow my beard out because my beard's white and I could do Santa. But then you have to have snotty kids in your lap. I'm not doing it. I'm not doing Santa. No.
No, I'm good. They make a lot of money though, Glenn.
Do they really?
Like $100,000. It's insane.
No, they don't.
Yes, mall Santas make a butt ton of money.
No, they don't.
Yes, they do. Google it. Here, I'll Google it while you're talking.
Okay, I didn't realize that. Now you're changing my mind. It could be my retirement gig. How about this one? She was a surveyor for oil and gas. So she said we'd go to remote mountains towns and we'd fly the helicopter out every day. She said we had to make an emergency landing in the helicopter in a complete whiteout blizzard once. I was looking out the window of the helicopter watching the treetops hit the bottom of the helicopter. And we did land. That's good. You're still here. I guess you landed. But yeah, that. And then also, she said the worst day she had was that she was profiling a river and I got knocked down and swept down the river. Hypothermia and a busted up hand. The helicopter was already there waiting when we did this, so I got a quick ride to the hospital. Okay, I'm out.
Okay, would you like to know how much Santas make?
Yeah.
Okay. The average hourly pay for a mall Santa can be between $25 and $150 an hour, with $500 an hour for private events. A typical six-week holiday season can yield up to $20,000 for a Santa. Pay varies on experience, costume quality, and ability to act authentically. High-demand, experienced Santas can often charge more. Dude, you might want to get into this.
Can I wear one of those, you know, outfits that they wear in contaminated areas? You know, the white outfit. Can I wear that over my Santa outfit?
Well, it does say that the cost for a high quality custom suit can exceed $1,000. So I don't think that they're going to let you do a hazmat suit. But
maybe I can put it under my Santa outfit.
Yeah, there you go. Pay to play. Get some experience.
Am I allowed to wear a mask? Does Santa allowed to wear a mask?
They said that top earning Santas can make over $150,000 a year.
Oh my God. I did not guess that. I figured they were making $4 an hour at the mall.
Nope. It's a lot.
Okay. Well, they can have it. It's still snotty kids not doing that. Okay. The first one I had was on the third shift and had to fill makeup containers all night on the assembly line.
Oh.
I could not do an assembly job. My ADD would kick. I couldn't do that. She said, I fell asleep standing up, so I decided I better not keep that job. I guess not. I was on the third shift, and I did that one already. There was never a dull moment. I worked as a 911 operator.
Oh, gosh.
That person has some stories. I could not do that job.
That's so scary.
The one show I listened to, what was that like? He plays the 911 calls. I cannot even listen to the 911 calls. I skip them. It's too hard for me to listen to them.
It's really, yeah. I mean, and there's some of them that can like decode what's actually being said. Like this is random and you can cut this out if you want to, but I remember watching an episode of something growing up and it was a 911 operator and she answers the phone, 911, what's your emergency? And the lady goes, yeah, hi, I'm just calling to let you know I'm not going to be able to go to work today. I'm not going to show up. Ma'am, you do realize this is 911. Yeah, no, I'm just letting you know I'm not going to be able to come to work today. And the 911 operator goes, are you safe? Nope. I'm not going to be able to do it. Turns out this lady had, somebody had like a gun to her head and she was like, if I don't call work to tell them I'm not coming, they're going to come and find me and they will be here and they'll bring. So she calls 911 and pretends to be. And I was like, oh my God, the 911 operators can be just ultimate superheroes. And that always scared me. And so just
yeah, I've heard that with pizza, they call and order pizza. Apparently that's the thing now is if they call and order pizza, they know right away that it's something like that.
Oh, really? Yeah. So you dial 911, you're like, hey, I'd like to get a pizza.
Two pepperoni pizzas, large, you know. And then they have to give the address where it's delivered to.
God
bless whoever this was. That's one job that I could never do.
I don't know who can watch murder shows. Like, I mean, one of the biggest things women listen to is those murder podcasts. Yes. How?
Crime podcasts are number one right now in the country.
I know. I don't get it. I don't get it. It's terrifying.
I don't either. All the documentaries on Netflix now about all the murders that ever happened in the history of life.
Yeah.
They're all over the place. And they're apparently popular. They wouldn't keep making them. Like the Jeffrey Dahmer ones and stuff. I can't do it with you on that.
It's so scary. I can't watch it.
Life is terrifying enough.
I know.
Let's not add to it. Well, on that note, what job did you have that you went, you're saying to yourself, well, that was weird, or I can't do that anymore. Let us know. You can email me if you're not an auditor at glenn@horseradionetwork.com. We want to hear what weird job you had.
I also, not in the gross category, but a weird job that was just a terrible job, because it's so gross. Like, when you get it, I was a Philly cheesesteak delivery driver when I was 16.
In Atlanta,
I worked for the Philly Connection, and I would deliver cheesesteaks sandwiches. And by the way, when you order a cheesesteak sandwich and then it takes 15 minutes to get it, it is so soggy and gross.
I can't imagine a cheesesteak being delivered.
Yeah, it was near Emory University. So I would drive up and go to the dorms and take hot guys' gross sandwiches.
You went from that to being on Top 40 Radio in Atlanta.
Yeah,
you went a long way up.
I've done lots of stuff.
And quickly. I mean, this was all relatively quickly.
You know what? That in that situation, I was like, never. Somebody told me a long time ago, when somebody says, have you ever done it before? Never say no. Always say, I've done it once. Because if you say, no, I've never done it, they're just going to do it for you and show you. But if you say, I've done it once, they're going to be like, okay, we'll try it again. And so you would sit there and, like, when I was doing the radio stuff, yeah, I've done it once. Like, I've totally not done anything ever. But yeah, sure, I've done it. I've done
you
it once.
Listen to a lot of radio. I mean, you probably listen to radio while we're delivering subs.
My first job I ever got waiting tables. They were like, have you ever waited tables before? And I was like, no, but I go out to eat a lot. So there you go. And I got the job.
I think right now that would be a way to get hired, waiting tables.
Yeah. I go out to eat a lot. I know.
I know what I like in waitresses. So
yeah.
Anyway, thank you, auditors, for posting those. We really do appreciate them. Now, hang on. We're going to talk about making friends as an adult. So auditors, hang on for that. Everybody else, we have the American Horse Council tomorrow. We have Mary Kitzmiller and Jennifer on Thursday. And of course, get your weird news into weirdnews@horseradionetwork.com for Wednesday. And Jamie, good luck today with the pony.
Thank you. Yeah, anybody still listening, this has been kind of the show about nothing. So thank you for being here.
Well, you know what? A certain Seinfeld made a lot of money with the show about nothing. We're waiting for the money part.
I mean, I told you how much I earned with my resource, so.
We got nothing down pat.
Spain or the geld. And I'm doing it.